Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica with Turn the Page podcast at Syosset Library, and I am talking to
Sarah Pinsker.
Nice to have you on, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. It is a lovely morning, and I'm excited about my book, and all is good.
So are we. So your book is called A Song for a New Day, and it's set in. It's interesting because it's science fiction, but like it feels like it's maybe not really science fiction. It feels like it's something pretty plausible that could happen in the future. Would you like to tell the listeners the premise of your book?
Sure. It is very, very, very near future. And it is about there's sort of a before and an after, and there's a musician character who's about to named Luce, who is about to sort of take off. Her career is starting to really ramp up. She's got a really popular song, and there's a bunch of incidents that happen, some domestic terrorism type stuff that result in the government saying it would be safer for people to stay home, and then turning that, sort of codifying that, and so it's about what happens in the aftermath of that. And we have Luce, who knew what it was like before and is trying to carve out something in the after, where the government has made these laws to prevent people from gathering.
Which is very unfortunate for somebody who's a musician, who obviously wants live performances and wants to perform for their fans. And then there's Rosemary, who's a bit younger. There's similarities between the two women, but they're both from completely different generations and backgrounds. Rosemary works for Super Wally, which I guess is kind of like Walmart plus.
Walmart and Amazon and all those, a whole bunch of places rolled into one.
Right. And go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. It's always funny when you do these over the Skype interviews, because you don't get the cues from the person, which I guess is actually very relevant to the story in this book. So Rosemary, she works for Super Wally in the beginning of the book, and the way that Super Wally works, she's like a call-in tech type person, but people use avatars. Sort of describe the hoodie, because everybody who works for these companies, they have something called a hoodie.
Yeah, it's this tech that has become very ubiquitous, and I don't really describe it too much, but it's something that lets you. It's just another way of getting online, but it's sort of VR or augmented reality technology that's been streamlined a little, and subsidized so that everyone can have it. So people go to school in it, and they shop in it, and they go to bars, and they go to concerts, and everything, all in the sports, all in this hood system. I call it hood space. So she works. She works in there, and it has sort of some good points and bad. I like putting some shades of gray in there. So for Rosemary, it's been a safe place to grow up, and she can do, as far as she knows, you know, it's a pretty wide and varied world. And if you think about some of those technologies, like concerts that you can see from your home, people who don't have the ability to travel, or, you know, if you're talking about little shows in basements, like, can you get a wheelchair down there? All of those questions. It can be an accessibility tool also. So I wanted there to be some shades of gray and some reasons you would want this. I also played around with if everyone's in hoodies, you know, and it's they're given to everyone regardless of economic status, then you know, maybe it can help some of the schools that aren't doing so well, the kids who go to schools that maybe don't have the same opportunities, maybe some of that will even out.
Right, right.
But you're still stuck in a hood, and where do you go from there? So
it's
I wanted to play with all of that.
No, it worked. It worked really well. And the questions that come up. So basically, so Luce, unfortunately for her at this point in her career where she's about to really break loose, pun intended, it's suddenly she can't legally play concerts like she wants to. And she found concerts when she was a child. She grew up in a very religious Orthodox religious household. So it was, you know, in a way she found herself in that. She didn't she didn't really fit as well she really wanted to with the family, her family and community. She's queer. She wants to be a rock star. It just wasn't. It was very painful for her. Was the impression that I got. But really, you know, she found herself in being a musician. Mm-hmm. And Rosemary, on the other hand, you know, she lives with her family. She's very good at her job for Super Wally, and she's suddenly exposed to a quote unquote live show, but it's really not a live show. It's like Stage Hollow Live, which is a way that you could get an experience of a live show in hood space, like you were describing. And she likes it so much that she applies for a job with Stage Hollow Live, but her job requires her to go outside, which is not something she's used to.
Yeah, that kind of throws everything in a tizzy for her because she has to change gears.
So how did you decide between the contrast of the two different women, they're the two different generations?
Well, I love stories of contrast like that. Like one of my favorite ways to generate conflict is to have those differing points of view, different generations or different ways of approaching life or anything like that. So you know, Luce had these experiences that left her a little bit jaded, but she's also got this thing that, you know, she loves live music, and she's an evangelist for live music, and she will do anything to make that happen. And then you have Rosemary, who is seeing everything through new eyes. And she's a lot of fun to write for a different reason, which is that everything is new to her. So she thinks she kind of thinks she's experienced in the world. Like she's, you know, she's good at her job and she's been to lots of different things online, but it doesn't compare. Just when she starts experiencing the real versions, they're smellier and they're tactile and there's all the, there's information coming at her that she wasn't expecting. So that contrast was a lot of fun. And they do have these similarities that are also fun to draw in, because that's what sort of connects them, is that they are both looking for connections. They're looking for human connections and finding them in different ways.
I liked the little subtleties just about how Rosemary, she was very, she wasn't 100% comfortable with being touched. And that was drawn in really well to the story, just the way it was written.
Yeah, she just was not used to that at all. If you come from a non-touchy family and you live your life in a non-tactile environment, then you know that'll come as a shock.
Yes, of course. I liked your description of so Luce is playing these concerts, I guess, in like basement concert halls, almost in people's houses. And Rosemary, her job is to find these people and get them to contract with Stage Hollow Live. It's almost like it's almost like a goldmine find for Rosemary that she's directed to this area where Luce is, considering that she had been, she had had a hit. So you're a musician. So when did you start playing music? We always think of it like our late teens, like when we, you know, when we really start to kind of come into the music that we like. What's your background in music? What were the musicians that really inspired you? And is Luce based on anybody?
Luce is based on a few people. She's a mix of a bunch of people. And I started doing open mics when I was 14 or 15. And I think I played in my friend's bar mitzvahs before that. Like I had a performance, a sort of desire to play even before I was, before I could really play. I was already, you know, I could barely play that guitar, and I was still out there, with my little electric guitar.
Nice.
Playing. Yeah. Yeah. I don't really have an explanation, 'cause I'm introverted in a lot of ways, but so I think while Luce is not based on me, there is a thing that might be, which is that I do love that connection with an audience. I love a live audience. I love playing music and trying to win people over, which I think I put into her.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and I think that there's a that connection and that conversation you get to have. There's something similar in readings, but they're a little tamer, because in a reading, there's less chance it'll go wrong. Like you have the script in front of you. So, there's something about playing live and you know, not knowing if someone's going to go wrong, and it's probably going to be me. And the, you know, the lyrics are sometimes there, and they're sometimes just not there when they're supposed to be.
That's part of the experience, though. I think like some of the most fun shows, you know, I've seen, or even like videos of shows I've seen, everybody knows the lyrics, and the artist is like, wait a second, what
right,
was
and
that?
Then everyone, right, and everyone gives it to the artist, like everyone says it, so that even though they have lost it, the audience sure hasn't lost it. Like, that's all great. There's something special about it. So I put all that in, and I guess there are some similarities. I'll give you that she's not entirely not based on me, because there's obviously, and there's stuff about touring that I drew on for her as well. But So I spent a whole lot of time touring as well. I've played in maybe 25 states and a handful of countries, and I love music, and it was a really fraught career. So for me it was sort of moment of comfort followed by lengthy period of stress over where the money was coming from.
Right.
So it wasn't viable as a long-term career, no matter how much I loved it. But that doesn't keep me from playing when I want to play, and releasing albums when I get a chance, and writing songs and all of that. I just can't do that particular thing as a career anymore.
It does sound, I mean, like almost like a marathon of a career. So how do you find the difference between writing lyrics and writing prose? Was that kind of was that something that was difficult to translate, or do you feel like it's just a different way of displaying a narrative?
Yeah, to me it's all storytelling, and it's just finding the right medium for the particular story you want to tell. And I guess, you know, poets have all these different modes to choose from. And for me, it's always been, prose or song. And then it was usually short stories. And then But stories usually tell you how long they want to be. So there are stories that are very short, and you can distill them to their essence and put them into three verses in a chorus and maybe a bridge, and you call that a song. And then there are stories that want to be maybe 5,000 words and need a little bit of room to expand, or 13,000 words and they need a little more room to tell everything they need. And then you put different labels on those. And this was just a story that needed a novel's worth of words to tell. I don't know that I could have distilled this one down to a song.
I couldn't see that either.
Yeah, but they're all a joy in their own way. And I like having all these different tools. I also feel like songwriting has made my fiction punchier, like that I can, that I word choice type of stuff. It's funny to search for a word when the word I'm looking for is word choice. just trying to get the perfect word for a situation, and I think that's helped in telling music stories in prose. So I feel like I've carved a nice little niche for myself here where I do feel like translating music into prose is something that's a lot of fun for me, and that I seem to be able to do in a way that satisfies people.
So getting back to the story, so when Rosemary starts her job trying to recruit these people for Stage Hollow Live, you find out a little bit just about the company itself. So as you said, there are things about it. I mean, I like to go to the occasional concert, but I'm also a bit of an introvert and like sitting on my couch. But it's not the same experience. However, you do find out, that the people who have signed with Stage Hollow, and again, there's good things about it. I mean, if you could get like something close to the experience without leaving your couch, like maybe, that could work for some people who either aren't gonna, can't physically get out or what have you, or even, can't find a babysitter for that night.
Right. Absolutely.
Stage Hollow, the thing that's interesting is what you get in the raw product is not always what they want when they sign you and put you on. And I found that to be very interesting. Like, they might like one person in your band, but if they don't like everybody, that was I thought that was an interesting kind of look at the darker part of those shades of gray.
Right. And I think I pulled that out of a whole lot of bands' experiences with major labels. That's got its own history. Look at the Beatles.
I was just going to say, yeah. I mean, Pete Best is the guy who didn't get into the Beatles because, right. What was it? Brian Epstein was like, not so much about that guy. Was it Brian Epstein? I can't remember. I know he did a lot of work with their image, which was a lot rougher when he found them, and like is the reason why they wore suits in the beginning and all of that. But was it Brian Epstein who kind of nixed Pete Best?
I think so. I don't want to go out on a limb and start.
No, me neither. I don't want to go out on a limb and start.
We can pretend we didn't get that right or wrong, and we can say of course.
I certainly don't want to disparage him, because he had an eye for talent in his own way, and it was very sad that he was lost. But it is true that the Beatles didn't originally play with Ringo Starr, and somebody who was signing them said, if you want to play, this is what we got to do.
Right. And that's happened to other bands as well. And some of the bands that do need more image, there's an interesting question there when and even if you are the only one, then they start trying to change you. Like there's a woman named Suede. She's sort of a jazz folk singer, and she had a famous story about how some producers came to her and said, "Look, we can make you a star. We just need you to." This was the 70s, I think, and she said, "We just need you to lose like 100 pounds, and you can be the next Cher." And she said, "Aha! Or I can gain 50 pounds and be the next Mama Cass."
Who does not get enough love? I think Cass Elliot is absolutely incredible, and not enough people like talk about how incredible she was.
Yeah, I agree completely. She was amazing. She has a gorgeous voice and
a revolutionary person. She just had a child and said, "I'm not telling you who the dad is, and I'm raising this child." But I mean, really, like, she's just incredible.
She's amazing. And so the music industry sometimes doesn't know what to do with people who they can't package perfectly. Mm-hmm. That new movie Yesterday also does a little bit of that. Like, they get this guy who's playing them the Beatles songs in a world that doesn't have the Beatles. and they immediately start working on massaging his image instead of saying, "Oh my God, these songs." And it's an interesting thing in itself, because it also raises the question, if you don't have that image part, do people notice the songs, or do people dismiss the fail to listen to the songs because of the way they're being presented? And there's amazing musicians playing in tiny basements everywhere, who haven't caught the ear of someone or don't want to catch the ear of someone, but it means that they are going to play in basements forever.
Exactly. Unfortunately. Yeah. And I don't want to give too much away, because this is a really good book and it has a lot of heart, and I loved it. I really did. I really thought that the diversity of the stories coming together. What would you like just readers to take away from just, you know, the thought? Because it's called A Song for a New Day, and in a way, Rosemary and Luce, they have their own ways of going about things, and neither one is necessarily 100% wrong. What would you want readers to take away just about the idea of the importance of at least trying to experience a live show?
I'm probably an evangelist for live shows too. So sometimes it's a matter of finding the show that speaks to you. So I think there are a lot of people who were raised thinking shows mean giant arenas and don't even know that, you know, there are tiny clubs where you can see bands. And
that's a good point. That's another thing. Yeah, that is a good point, because when you hear about shows, you hear about arenas in general.
Right, right. And there might be some band that you would completely fall in love with that has, you know, 10 people coming to see them, and they're still playing for the love and hoping that the 11th person comes, and then the 11th person comes back. So I guess if I'm being honest with myself, part of what I want to convince people is that they should go seek out some little shows and find a band that they love, and they can be that 11th person through the door and make their night.
So the book takes place in the Maryland area?
A lot of it takes place in Baltimore.
It
ranges a little wider than that. In different parts, like, it goes to different cities over the course of the book, but the middle part is in Baltimore, which is where I live.
That's cool. There was actually an artist who was out of Baltimore in the late 90s, early 2000s, who I really loved, and I kind of, like, she was another one who kind of played in small places, and, like, I wish more people would have heard about her as well.
Who's that?
Mary Prankster.
Oh, Mary Prankster was great. Yeah.
You know Mary Prankster.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're
yeah,
officially
yeah.
my BFF.
I don't know what she's doing these days.
She's coming out with a new album in November.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Baltimore is a great place for music because it's a city that's pretty affordable. And I know that's a funny thing to say, but there's a really, really good art scene here because artists can afford to live here and live in the community and better the community where they are. And it, I just find like you go to DC and people ask who you work for, right, and then you come here and people expect you to have a side thing that you love, and that maybe you love that side thing more than your day job. Maybe you don't. Maybe you have a great day job too, or not. Who knows? But you can have. I have a ton of friends who do this community water ballet. Where,
that sounds so
where,
cool.
Like, yeah, and anybody can join. There's no barriers on age or gender or body type or anything. It's a community thing, and you can swim, or you can, in the winter they sometimes do roller skating events, or you can be the ticket taker, or you can be part of a skit in between, or you can do costumes, whatever it is. But yeah, it's just a city where there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of artsy energy going out there, and great, great bands.
Absolutely. Well, that that is definitely true from my experience, having visited when I was younger, and it's good to know that it's still going on. So I really do just before we close out, I really do recommend that you know, our listeners read A Song for a New Day. It's a really good book. It's an interesting contrast, I think, and just like the idea of thinking about before time and after time. And one thing we didn't even go into was there was a pox that passed, that a lot of people got sick, and Rosemary was a survivor of that. Am I correct?
Yes.
So, and that's another reason why people don't go outside. I mean, it really is just such a, like, it's such a now book that I hesitate to call it science fiction, even though it's got some of that in it. It's just such a plausible future. And it really gives us something to think about.
Yeah, science fiction is always kind of a more of a prism for what's going on now and for looking at things. So that, I mean, that's how I approach it. So when people say this feels like it could happen, I feel sort of bad about it. And
no, that's actually how it always works best.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Twilight Zone episodes that are usually the creepiest are the ones that feel like they could happen. You know, they've got like a basis. Well, once again, Song for a New Day is an amazing book. Thank you so much for writing it. And if people want to read more about you or maybe hear a little bit more about your music, where could they find you?
SarahPinsker.com. That's SarahPinsker.
Thank you so much. And I am going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode. It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode. Thank you.